A rare one that was missed by Rodgers, but Adames cleans it up, throws out Baldwin.
Justin Verlander. He did it.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Get a shower. Get the boys fired up. It's going to be a nice flight that you're going to be on.
263 for the great Justin Verlander today. 9-3, the Giants win the season series 5-1 against the Braves.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
That's a great question.
It's a great question.
That's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard, it's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. And Dibs, it's not just any win. It's one, a series winner on the rubber match. It's a Justin Verlander first win of the year, win number 263 in his career. And it means the flight back to the Bay is a happy one. Big day for the Giants.
No doubt. Big day for the Verlander family. Yep. And big day for Justin, where, you know, you did a lot in Detroit. You did a ton in Houston. You come here and you've been waiting. I've been waiting for a win like you. And you finally get it.
He got
in Atlanta.
It.
There
in
you
his
go.
17th start of the year. He gets his first win of the year. And he's had a number of outings that he deserved to win, but he had to wait all the way until July 23rd. And speaking of the Verlander family, joining us now on the River Islands guest line is none other than Justin's brother, Ben. Ben Verlander with us here on 95.7 The Game. Ben, great to have you. Thanks so much for taking some time. It's Grandy and Dibs with you. Big day for the Verlander family, huh?
Big day. That's right. It took a while, but we got there. It feels great.
5 innings, 1 hit, no runs. It was not easy. 5 walks. He had to really fight through those 5 innings. Just how much did it mean to him to finally get that win in his win column for the first time this year?
Yeah, it's just a massive weight off of your shoulders. As you mentioned, he's thrown well in games that he's deserved to win, and there's obviously been starts that haven't been so great. But for it to get to this point, obviously there's a lot that goes not your way throughout the year. So to have a game where you ultimately don't give up any runs, I don't think it was his sharpest start of the year, but you don't give up any runs just to hit, and then the offense puts up, I think it was 9 in the end for you. I mean, it's a good day for him, obviously, a weight off the back, but it's a good win for the Giants when they desperately needed it.
And desperately, I'm coming off yesterday, and Grandy and I were talking about a 2-4 road trip, where when you think about a 2-4 road trip, you think, oh, what a letdown. But the fact that they won back-to-back games with 9 runs in each feels definitely better. And, you know, for your brother, it's got to feel like a little bit of a weight off his shoulders. Not that he has much pressure, right? Because he's going to be a Hall of Famer, first ballot most likely. But the burden of being on a new team and not being as good as you've been, how much would that weigh on him?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, obviously, I think I was superstitious for the longest time about saying he's a Hall of Famer. I wouldn't say I have much to worry about anymore. He's a Hall of Famer. He's accomplished so much in his career. But that doesn't take away how important steps along the way are for him. And he wanted to be a Giant this year. He wants to perform. He still believes he can. The stuff he has still shows he can. It's just been a tough year. So, you know, although he's accomplished a lot right now, his focus is on the 2025 Giants, and it just hasn't worked out to get a win so far. So especially, you know, it's a good ball team, and to have it take this long isn't what he was thinking, but we finally got there. And as you mentioned, it is a huge relief. It's a huge weight off your shoulders. And I'm excited to see his next couple starts now. Just a breath of fresh air, really.
Yeah. Ben Verlander joining us here on Willard and Dibs. You can hear Ben break down everything baseball related on his podcast, Flippin' Bats, available wherever you get your podcast. You mentioned, Ben, I think both you and Justin feel like this is a pretty big or a pretty good ball club. No doubt they have been going through some struggles, but if we were to zoom out and take the Giants as a whole, and you look at Rafi Devers now with this team and struggled a lot as a Giant so far, but 2 home runs today, has been hitting the ball better. How do you view the Giants as a whole, particularly in the National League wildcard race?
Yeah, I think it's been an interesting year. They came out of the gates blazing. It's been a it's largely a good year. Obviously, past few weeks, especially, you know, before this two-game winning streak, it's been a bit of a tough go. So it's all about getting yourself back under control, and they've seemingly done that. You know, if you were to say at the beginning of the year, at the end of July, you'll be five games over 500 and right around the wild card bubble, you know, a game out of a wild card, I feel like you'd feel pretty good about yourself. And then you have Rafi Devers on your team who has really started swinging the bat well. You know, it happened to him at the beginning of the year when he was with the Red Sox, got out of the gate slow, was dealing with a lot off the field and all the drama over there, got out of the gate slow, and then became what he is, which is one of the best hitters in baseball. And now you have to deal with a trade in the middle of the year amidst all that drama and a new team, and you really try and perform. And now it looks like he's back to being the Rafi Devers that he has been his whole career. So, you know, I think the Giants are in a really good place. You're about a game and a half out of a playoff spot. It's the end of July. You have Rafi Devers heating up in the middle of that lineup. You know, you have Justin getting his first win off the schneid now. He's back. So, you know, I think you take where you are for sure, and now you go.
Is part of what gives you enthusiasm and, I guess, confidence is the fact that the National League is kind of muddled in mediocrity?
Yeah, I think, look, it's very top-heavy, at least so we thought. It looked like the American League was going to be the easier league, and I would say the National League is still stronger, but all those teams that we thought were going to be dominant in the National League are good ball clubs. The Dodgers are good, but they're really going through it right now. The Phillies are good, but you know, they haven't been outstanding. Same with the Mets. So then you just look around and it's like, okay, all of these teams are seemingly having a chance. There's the juggernauts and then there's that tier below, which, look, I think the Giants aren't yet, I don't think they're quite on par with the roster that maybe the Dodgers have or the Phillies have, but they're in that tier for the conversation of playoffs. So you look around and you think, absolutely. I mean, are they better than the Padres? They can be. Are they better than the Cubs or the Mets or the Reds who are right behind them? I think the National League is wide open, and that might not have been the case coming into the year like we thought it might be.
Ben Verlander, brother of Giants starting pitcher Justin Verlander, with us here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game, host of the Flippin' Bats podcast. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts. Ben, you played college ball, you played minor league ball, you've been in a lot of baseball clubhouses in your life. I'm curious, when things are going terrible for a club, like it had been for the Giants, and particularly Monday night when their starter doesn't get a single out, when their defense is letting routine balls drop and letting Acuna score from first on a single, when everything you can think of is going wrong, what is it like to be in a clubhouse in moments like that? And a team meeting, a players-only meeting, a come-to-Jesus moment, any of the above, what's it like to experience that? And one win, two wins, how quickly can things change from as bad as it could possibly be to maybe a team getting on a streak?
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, it changes everything. It sucks coming to the field every day. It just, everybody's a little more down in the dumps and the road trip hadn't been good. You sort of see the standings and you see where you were a month ago and you feel where you are now and you feel like it's every day, you know, there's 162 games. It can get monotonous. So winning helps everything. It helps you keep moving along. And when you're not, it can really bog you down. And I can't overstate the importance of finishing a road trip with two straight wins, your new acquisition that's supposed to be one of the best players in baseball, finally turning it on and becoming a stud like he is. And then the old veteran pitcher coming on board and getting his first win. And then you hop on a flight back home and salvage at least an okay road trip. Man, I can't tell you how quickly those vibes change. It was a tough go of it. But to win those final two games and the way they did and have the players that did step up, and now you get on a long cross-country flight back home and then you get an off day, and then it changes everything. So it's not just winning this one ball game. It's the couple in a row. It's how it was done. And now it's just the whole vibe changes. You celebrate in the locker room today. I remember I played with Willie Adames in the minors. I remember talking to him I went to the game in Anaheim months and months ago, and I remember talking to Willie then and him saying, man, we just can't get Justin a win. And I know the offense was feeling it and was putting pressure on themselves, and for it to happen, I guarantee you there was a celebration in the locker room today. And to carry that celebration and momentum onto the flight together to head back home to your home and to your families and your home ballpark, man, I can't tell you how high vibes are right now.
So the celebration, and I know that a lot of times there's a shopping cart and there's condiments and there's a whole variety of substances that get put on to the pitcher who gets the win. Your brother's 42. Does he have the countenance and the disposition to allow some of these whippersnappers to celebratory haze him like that?
I think at this point, absolutely. I think this was such a relief. We haven't spoken on the phone yet, but we were texting back and forth a little bit. So I'm excited to hear what the celebration was like. But look, at this point, you take every celebration you can get, and he's one of the guys at the end of the day. He doesn't want to feel like the 42-year-old guy that's supposed to, you know, coach everybody and teach them along. He wants to feel like part of the team. And today he got the team a big win. The offense stepped up for the second day in a row. And I think whatever they wanted to spray on him in the locker room was probably done.
If you could cancel out one of the following, ranch, mayonnaise, mustard, or ketchup, which of the four would you least like to be smeared with in a celebration?
You know, these are the questions I was preparing for this whole interview.
And I was hoping so, Ben, because, I mean, that's what I do. I'm a little bit more of the off-the-beaten-path guy.
Yeah, you know, those are all ones that I would have. I don't shy away from any of those. So if I had to pick one, I guess I would say mustard. I don't know. I'm a big ranch guy, big ketchup guy, and I forget the other one you
mayonnaise.
Mentioned. So I'm gonna go with mustard.
Yeah, mayonnaise can linger now. I mean, mayonnaise with the egg factor that can stick around now for a while.
Well, good point. We didn't talk about, is there a refrigerator around to keep things fresh? We didn't have that conversation.
Ben, that's a great counterpoint there. Absolutely.
Ben, one more before you get on out of here. I'm curious what it means specifically to Justin, because so much of the talk about, well, he hasn't gotten the win just yet. He hasn't gotten the win just yet, and he finally gets it today on July 23rd. He's now sitting at 263 career wins. And the way that baseball is going, he might be the last guy with the best chance to ever win 300 games in their big league career. Do you know how important potentially winning 300 games is to him? Is that something that he wants to hang around in the big leagues for a number of years more to try to chase down?
Yeah, look, I don't want to put words in his mouth for sure, but I do know what's important to him is continuing to do what he loves, which is pitch. And, you know, he grew up idolizing Nolan Ryan, who obviously did it for a long, long time. And I don't think he's anywhere close to done. I know the numbers don't necessarily say he's having a great year, but the stuff is still there. He still loves to compete. And of course, that number 300 is in his brain. You know, he could potentially be the last pitcher to ever do it. He's still wants to pitch for a couple of years, so I do still think it's a possibility. And what's important to him is going out every fifth, sixth day and competing still. He loves to compete. And, you know, if that number's in the future, then we'll see where the cards fall. But you know what they say, you can't get to 300 without getting to 263, and we got there today.
Yeah, Nolan Ryan, 27 seasons, by the way. So Justin's going to have to pull himself up by the bootstraps. He'll have to pitch until he's 49 to get there.
You never know. You never know.
I mean, you never know.
He came off Tommy John a few years ago, and everybody thought he was done because he was almost 40, and then he won a Cy Young Award the next year. So, you know, he continues to be as good as he is, no matter the age. And I'm excited to see what the rest of this year certainly has. Giants are good, and what the future holds.
Yeah, we're excited for that as well, Ben. Ben, thanks so much for taking the time, and looking forward to hearing your thoughts as this Giant season continues to unfold.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Ben. That's Ben Verlander, brother of Justin Verlander, host of the Flippin' Bats podcast. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. That was fun. Ben Verlander giving us a little insight into the 42-year-old Justin Verlander.
No doubt. And just looking at Nolan Ryan, he won 63 games after he turned 40. And I know it was a little different then because you had a lot more decisions. You pitched deeper into games, and so you know you had a lot more of those games that you were able to be a part of and deciding them. But the fact that Ben says it's something in his mind, and it makes sense. And, you know, Grandy, you and I have talked a lot about the last 300-game winner, and this might be the last best chance because I'm looking at the current leaders. Verlander's got 263, and he's 42. And beyond that, you got to go to Max Scherzer, who's got 217. He's 40. Kershaw's got 216. He's 37.
Yeah, they're not getting to 230. Neither of those guys.
Or maybe 250 would be, I think, the outlier that would be the stretch for them to even get.
They're not getting
to that point, right?
Not.
Well, and now it's so hard because even younger starting pitchers, you don't usually throw more than six, and so if you only go five or six, you're hoping your team has a lead, and you're hoping you have a good bullpen to be able to get to that point where you can actually get it done. And so Verlander might be the last hope unless they change the qualifications on how you get a win.
Most recent 300-game winner, was that still Randy Johnson with the Giants in 09? Is that still the most recent? I think it might be.
It has to be. I'm just looking at the list right now, and it wasn't early winner Lefty Grove, and Randy had it after Glavin got his. Yep. It wasn't Old Hoss Radburn, was it?
That does not sound like a current name, no.
It doesn't. Anytime that your name starts with Old.
Old Hoss.
Right. Tom Seaver, Gaylord Perry, Phil Niekro, Don Sutton, rest in peace. No, like Steve Carlton, Roger Clemens got his before the big unit got his.
Randy was the most recent, confirmed. 09 with
the
Giants.
Are you sure it wasn't Pud Galvin?
Who?
Pud Galvin.
I don't think so.
He got 365 wins in 15 years.
You know, we talk a lot about the most unbreakable records in sports. It's probably the win record in baseball because Cy Young has 511 of them.
Yeah, no doubt.
511. Also, it might be innings pitched. He threw 7,300 innings.
That's it? I mean, he's mailing it in. Pud Galvin, by the way, rest in peace. He died in 1902, so it's not too soon. Pud Galvin was 365 and 310. The man lost 310 games.
The guy had 670 decisions?
675.
Oh, my God.
And two saves.
Wow. Wow.
He had two saves.
That's amazing.
Pud Galvin debuted at 18, and he went 4-2 with a 1-1-6. And then 4 years later, he actually came back and pitched for Buffalo. What were you? Were you in the Civil War? Were you been Pud? What's wrong with you, Pud? Where'd you go?
Maybe you'd be the winningest pitcher in baseball history had you not, you know, taken some time off.
In 1883, he started 75 games, and he had 72 complete games. Pud, I'm going to need you to get back out there,
he
Pud.
Why do you think he got pulled in those three instances? Bubble guts. He had something going
on.
It wasn't his arm. It was something else that was happening.
He went 46-29 that year. 46, and that's like an NBA team. 46-29.
Wow.
Can you imagine a Warrior, like, outside of Buttered, actually playing 75 games? Like, Steph didn't, Draymond didn't. Jimmy didn't. Buddy did.
Pajamski didn't this past year because of his ab issue.
He might. Looney he might this coming Steve year. Steve Kerr would have let him.
Oh, too soon.
It is too soon. Your boy Pud. He had a WAR of 20.5 that year.
Yeah, because he threw every inning for the team.
46-29. I mean,
my God.
Anyway,
what was his ERA?
That year it was 2.72.
Wow.
Pretty sturdy.
Wow.
Pud Galvin.
And he lost how many games?
29.
With a 2 ERA, he lost 29 games.
Right. And he completed 72 of them. So you want to talk about getting caned. This poor guy couldn't get any run support.
Just looking at the all-time wins list, we mentioned the three guys that are even in the neighborhood. Verlander now with 263, and we're talking about the three active guys. Verlander, 263 now. Scherzer, 217, and Kershaw, 216. Do you have any idea, Dibs, who the active pitcher with the fourth most career wins is? And it's way down the list.
Yeah,
we're looking at 153 career wins for this
153?
Fourth most active wins.
Oh, I mean, I have no idea.
He has not pitched this year. He's out all year with an injury.
Of course, because that's what happens now. Like, do you think Pud Galvin ever had Tommy John?
No.
Your boy Pud, he had no ligament, and he started 75 games. Like, these guys nowadays are so soft.
He's also apparently a cheater, by the way.
Wait a minute.
What?
Did the research on this. According to a 2006 NPR article, Pud Galvin was referred to as, quote, the first baseball player to be widely known for using performance-enhancing substances. Let me continue here. The Washington Post reported that Galvin used the Brown Sequard elixir, which contained monkey testosterone.
Hold on a minute. Time out. Time
the what the elixir?
Truck out. Monkey testosterone.
No, but what was it called? The what elixir?
Brown Sequard elixir.
I mean, do they test for what monkey testosterone?
What happened to the sport I love, Dibs?
What happened to the segment that I used to love?
Back in 1989, no one seemed bothered by it. No one batted an eye.
1889.
Yeah, you were about 100 years
not
off.
1989.
Then,
but, 1889.
I wonder if there is something there where modern pitchers would go to the monkey testosterone as the new elixir. I'm sure they don't test for that, right?
We're going to have to do a little bit of research here and figure this thing out. That is an amazing pull. By the way, the answer for the pitcher with the fourth most active pitcher with the fourth most career wins, it is Gerrit Cole, 153. Fourth most active wins.
153.
Yeah.
It's not happening. Like 300 wins, it's not happening unless Verlander really loves pitching like his brother says and he wants to do it for, and I'm not going to use this year, like he would need to pitch, 47 more years?
37.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's got one win.
263.
But, I mean, honestly, if he wants to keep doing it and he is able to do it, Nolan Ryan did pitch very, very late into his life.
Yeah,
and
he did.
I mentioned it. He was, I think, 47 almost when he pitched for Texas, and he went 5-5 with a 488. So, I mean, if Verlander wants to keep doing it,
yeah,
kid.
We'll see. But again, our thanks to Ben Verlander for joining us. He joined us here on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? Time for a break. Plenty more to talk about. 888-957-9570. Plus, the Niners opened camp with their first practice today. We got a lot to talk about in relation to that. Plus, Kyle Shanahan joined Tim Kawakami for a sit-down conversation at length. You're going to want to hear a lot of the things that Shanahan had to say. We'll get to all that when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you here on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
It's a great question.
Wow, that's a great question.
That's a great question.
That's a great question.
And that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Dibs and Grandy with you in for Willard on Willard and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. And Dibs, I promise we're going to get back to Bay Area sports talk.
I mean, if you must, right?
But the very end of our conversation with Ben Verlander, Justin's brother, who joined us last segment, if you missed it, you can hear it on the free Odyssey app. You can go back on YouTube and find it. Look for it wherever you get your podcast. It will be up there shortly. Great conversation with Ben Verlander on the River Islands guest line, but we're talking about Justin's chase for win number 300. Today's win for Justin was the 263rd of his Major League Baseball career, meaning he's only, 37 wins away from joining the 300 wins club. He has the best chance of anybody active to get 300, and he might be the best remaining chance in the history of Major League Baseball.
Right.
As a result, we were looking at some of the all-time winningest pitchers in Major League history, and one name, for whatever reason, Dibs, that you circled and you began to do a deep dive on was Pud Galvin, and then our fearless crack staff behind the glass.
Yep.
Dove even deeper into Pud Galvin and found out that he was baseball's first juicer, Dibs, the first performance enhancing substance user, and he's in the Hall of Fame, by the way. But he has a unique story in terms of the substance that he used to help him, Dibs.
Okay.
He injected himself, or he got injected with what's called the brown Sequard elixir.
All right.
Which refers to the self-experimentation conducted by a famous physician of the time. That's where it gets its name, in 1889. Where at the age of 72, he injected himself with extracts of animal testicles.
Wait, Dibs, what?
As a purported remedy.
Who is this and what has he done with Grandy?
For debility and old age, leading to what he claimed was a rejuvenation. In general, the concoction gained significant fame and was widely adopted by thousands of physicians in the late 19th century.
Right, because that's what I want to smear on my body. I want to find an animal and go ahead and do the double snip and mince it and smear it, and that's going to help me live longer. Spoiler alert, Pud, he died at 45. So I don't know how much of your monkeying around actually worked out. James Francis Pud Galvin. I'm kind of fascinated by nicknames back then, and I'm just looking at the career list of all-time innings pitched, and you've got Old Hoss Radborn. At what point do you get nicknamed Old? And, like, I assume that Haas is his nickname. And there's another one, and I'm going to find this one because I want to make sure I get it right. There's Old Hoss Radborn, and there's a guy whose nickname was just Sad. Like,
his nickname was Sad?
Yes. Huh. Let me find it here on the career wins list. It's, Pud Galvin. At what point do you get nicknamed Pud? Like, what do you have to do to draw the nickname of Pud?
We just found it out. According to Lucas Behind the Glass, he got the nickname Pud. Maybe it's pronounced Pud. I don't know. Because he made hitters look like pudding.
Okay. Makes sense. I love a deep dive from Lucas in the 19th century. I mean,
that is great.
Yeah. Totally. The deep dive. I mean, this guy is long, long gone. But.
Can I read a portion of an article from USA Today about this to you?
About Pud?
About Pud.
Please.
And also his doping allegations.
Oh.
According to the Washington Post, I'm just reading from USA Today. Quote, according to the Washington Post, the mustachioed right-hander received an injection of the elixir, a concoction of testicular fluid, apparently from dogs and guinea pigs, that was being touted at the time as the elixir of life. Galvin proceeded to pitch a two-hit shutout in a win over the Boston Bean Eaters the next day. And here's a quote from a newspaper, a local newspaper. Quote, if there still be doubting Thomases who concede no virtue to the elixir, they are respectfully referred to Galvin's record in the Boston-Pittsburgh game. The newspaper reported on August 14th, 1889, quote, it is the best proof yet furnished of the value of the discovery.
There you go. And, he's out there pitching 75 games a year anyway, so.
And a two-hit shutout the day after he received the injection, Dibs. Coincidence? I think not.
I think not as well, and I think about, like, this modern day and age where, you know, Verlander throws a gutsy five innings, and it's like, yeah, huzzah, attaboy Justin, way to get through five innings. This guy started 75 games a year out of 154, so basically you had a two-man rotation. Hey, Pud, get out there. I don't feel like it today. All right, who else we got? And his name is Sad Sam Jones. He threw 3,883 innings. And I wonder at what point, like, do you get the nickname Sad? Maybe he is a guy who just cried all the time, but you know, the nicknames back then were, they were kind of lightweight bullying, where, you know, you got a nickname based on your overall demeanor. But the reason why we're talking about this is Verlander, and can he get to 300? And it had me thinking about Nolan Ryan, who did pitch until he was 47. So if Verlander can go 5 more years, could he get to 300? It still is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he'd have to win at a much higher rate than he has been this year, that's for sure.
True.
One win in 17 starts. Giants are now, what, 5-12 in his starts this year. Obviously, for the Giants' case, and for what Ben Verlander, his brother, joined us, Justin Verlander joined us last segment, and essentially what Ben said was, yes, the 300-win plateau means a lot to Justin, and he still loves pitching. He's going to do what he loves, and as long as he still loves pitching, then he will keep doing it. We'll see how long that lasts. But Ben, I think, also gave us a good answer, and I would imagine this is the way Justin feels. You don't, like, go out to a start today, his next start, his start in Toronto to begin the second half. You don't go out there thinking, I have to win this game because I need to get to 300 wins. You just go out there and try to do your best every single time out, and the wins will take care of themselves. At least that's the way that you should tackle it. And if the wins come, the wins come, and maybe you can get to 300 wins. But if they don't, I guess my point, Dibs, is it's not as if this is the thing that's on the forefront of his mind 24/7 when he's out there pitching. He's just trying to get the dude out that's at the plate at the moment.
Right, and I do think that he still enjoys going out there and pitching because he's got enough money, and his wife, Kate Upton, who just gave birth to their second child, I would imagine she did well enough with her career to where she has enough money. So it's not about the money. And if it's about chasing 300, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons, and I don't think that he's doing it for that. I think he really just enjoys pitching, and he is good enough to still be out there trying to get people out. I mean, the stuff is mostly still there, and he's not dominant anymore like he was, you know, a few years back. And Ben, his brother who joined us, talked about, you know, he had Tommy John, then he won the Cy Young Award.
And, no one expected that.
Right, and even at that, though, that's now been, what, 4 years, 3 years? That was 2022 when he won the Cy Young. He was 18-4. With a 1.75 in Houston. That is an unbelievably dominant year. And, you know, this year now you're 1-8 with a 4.6 or whatever the ERA is now resting at. So can he still go out there and be a major league pitcher? Absolutely. But can he go out there and win 37 more games? That might be tough.
Seems unlikely. If we were taking bets, I think almost everybody would say no. I think we would say no, Dibs, not because we think he's, well, there might be a lot of people out there who think he's a terrible pitcher now, but the reason I say no is just because I don't think he's going to pitch enough seasons the rest of the way to get to that number. Like, say he pitches 4 more seasons beyond this one, maybe he gets, let's say, 3 more wins the rest of the year, and he finishes, or just say 2 more, 265, which means he needs 35 wins the rest of the year, and say he pitches 4 more seasons, Dibs, that means he's got to get, what, we're talking about like 8 wins?
Yep. Yep.
8 wins per season? And that seems like a pretty tall task.
It's a tall task for any pitcher, let alone somebody who's in their 40s. And I also think about the nature of starting pitchers. And, you know, I'm going to pull up the number to get it exactly right. But I do think that of the Giants' wins, barely more than half go to the starting pitcher.
Yeah.
And it's just because you don't go deep enough anymore where if you go 7 or you go 8, you can benefit from a late rally even if you're, you know, you're down 4-3 and your team gets you a couple of runs in the 7th or the 8th and you're still out there. You have a better chance of getting the win and you have a better chance of getting the decision. Nowadays, more and more, the wins don't go to the starter anyway.
Yeah. I think the other thing that Ben Verlander told us when I asked him about the, you know, terrible stretch of play and how embarrassing, frankly, Monday was. And, you know, whether it's Bob Melvin that calls a team meeting or maybe there was a players-only meeting, who knows? There hasn't been reporting of that. And we had a question on the Boxer and Gersten work injury attorney's text line from the 650 asking, do you know who called the players-only meeting? I just threw that out there in the question. There is no evidence that there was a players-only meeting. There was some sort of meeting, I think, with the whole team. Bob Melvin involved and included in that. But anyway, I asked Ben about how quickly things can turn around and he was talking about the celebration of a moment like today where you can celebrate Verlander getting his first win of the year, and how just the act, Dibs, of getting a win and celebrating something, no matter how big, no matter how small, that can be something that just can immediately lift a team out of the depths of the terrible funk that you're in. And that could be like a really quick way to kind of turn things around. Maybe you're not super convinced that everyone is playing great baseball, but just the act of getting out of your own head and celebrating something like that can kind of just be a release and can turn you around.
No doubt. And you think about the road trip, and I mentioned they went 2-4, and that sucks. If you go 2-4 and you win 33% of your games, well, you're worse than the Nats. You're better than the Rockies, but you're basically the White Sox if you win 2 out of every 6 games. But you had Rafi Devers, 2 home runs, and he maybe snapped out of his funk, maybe not. You had Adames, who continued to swing a hot stick, and you got Justin Verlander a win. So you get on that plane, and there's a lot of positivity. You don't have to worry about the 2-4 on the road trip. You just feel good about the fact that you took the last 2. Devers is getting woken up. The only bummer, and I haven't seen a report on this, but Matt Chapman, he got drilled on the elbow. So
X-rays came back negative.
That's good.
That's all we know, but right. He still might not be able to play Friday. Who knows? But
yeah,
negative
X-rays. We had the same thing with Casey Schmidt before, yeah. Right? When he got hit and the X-rays were negative and he ended up missing some time. So
yeah.
By the time he gets all the way back here, and tomorrow is an off day, which is good, but maybe he gets stiff and sore and he has to miss a game. Hopefully not much more than that if he does. But the positivity from yesterday and today definitely would make the team meeting feel like it mattered.
Yeah, no, it did matter. And that's where, and this is something that Steiny pointed out about Adames on Monday and his comments after the game Monday, talking about how they hadn't been playing with the same energy that they were early in the year. They were kind of just giving in to the struggles. Chapman post game today talking about no one has really called it a team meeting. But there was some, extracurricular conversation that went on from Bob Melvin to the rest of the team after the game on Monday. Chapman postgame today, quote, "Sometimes you need to hear it and hit the reset button and move forward. We're all big boys here," is what Chapman said postgame today. I would imagine, Dibs, based on what Chapman said, it's not a flipping of the spread. It's not Bob Melvin going absolutely berserk and grabbing players by their jerseys and pulling them aside and something crazy like that. But I would imagine there was some pretty fiery words that were shared in the clubhouse. And the team seems to have reacted in the right way, which is a good sign. Because the way that they played on Monday in the first 4 games out of the All-Star break was absolutely embarrassing.
Yeah.
And they had to win the next 2 games. Otherwise, it's a disastrous effort on this entire road trip. And now, as you mentioned, you turn an 0-4 start into an actual happy flight home, which is really difficult to do. And not a small thing. That is a pretty big deal going into an off day.
Yeah, and it was unacceptable. And you get swept in Toronto, and the offense wasn't there, and it was, kind of disappointing. You never want to get swept anywhere. But then you go to Atlanta, and you play the way you played, which was absolutely sloppy. You were sloppy. Your defense was sloppy. And so, yeah, it called for some sort of a come to Jesus or a team meeting, whatever it was. But you openly air your feelings and what's going on. And every team, you do it differently. Some teams are ready for a flipping of the spread, so to speak, where, you can just go off and, you get mad and everybody yells or whatever. And other teams, you have to sit down in a circle. And I had one of those teams where we were going through a bad patch, and I was coaching high school boys volleyball, and we had gone through a rough week or a rough weekend. And so we actually sat down crisscross applesauce on the gym floor, and we just opened it up. Like, express yourself. What's going on? No worries about blame. Nobody's blaming anybody, but let's talk about your feelings. Like, what's going on with the team that we can all address and fix? And so every team, you go about it in a different way. And I do think whatever the modality was after that game on Monday, it seemed to have worked.
Yeah, and I don't think there's been nothing to suggest that the lineup or the locker room, the clubhouse is Is any drama involved, like player to player? Like it seems like this is a group that gets along and enjoys being around each other. Like it's not as if towards the tail end of the Kapler era when you had Jock Peterson and you had all these others and you had all those issues in the clubhouse where it just seemed like there was a big chunk of that clubhouse who frankly did not really care to be part of the team and to really focus on the job at hand and yada, yada, yada and all that. I don't think any of that is happening. But the issues that were cropping up for the Giants on the field, Dibs, if, you know, left unchecked and if things don't improve, those could be the kind of things that lead to issues in the clubhouse. You had outfielders dropping easy fly balls, making bad throws from 20 feet away, 25 feet away to the target that were giving up extra bases, that were giving up free runs, but they weren't technically errors. And those runs are being charged to the pitchers, and the pitchers, that gets charged to their permanent record. Not that, you know, Ryan Walker is going to walk in and throw hands at Elliot Ramos and right. Jeonghoo Lee for dropping a ball, but it's kind of natural being a human, Dibs, and holding potentially in the back of your head a little bit of a grudge. You cost me that run. That's an earned run on my ledger, but you just have to do your job out there. So that sort of thing left unchecked could at some point spiral into something worse. It doesn't seem like that's happening, which means the team can recover from this and then continue to take a step forward.
And you should, and that comes down to the leadership, and that's where when you have a skipper like Bob Melvin, a guy who's been doing it for a very long time, he knows when to use that and fire that bullet, so to speak, where, you know, you can't have a team meeting every time you lose a game, then players will tune you out. So you wait until things get to a certain point, and when you lose the first four games of a road trip, especially in the way you lost that fourth game, which was absolutely sloppy, and even earlier in the series, I saw Logan Webb not throw his hands up at Elliot Ramos, but there was a play that, you know, he probably could have made, and he cut in too sharply on a ball that actually kind of sailed over his head, and they cut to Logan Webb, and he's looking at it like, what was that? And, you know, those sorts of things need to get aired out, and you have to be able to speak on it man-to-man and just, you know, express your frustration as a pitcher, as an outfielder. And I do think that the language barrier can make some of this stuff hard, where, I mean, if you have a team meeting and you've got some guys who are not English first, Jeonghoo Lee and, you know, Rafi Devers, I know, prefers to speak through an interpreter. So I wonder if you have these team meetings, how many other interpreters you have in there just to try to...
I hadn't considered that.
Yeah, I mean, you have to get the message across, right?
Yeah.
And if you've got Spanish speakers who aren't comfortable with English and you've got Jeonghoo Lee speaking Korean, like when you have a team meeting, how many other people are actually in there, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't considered that at all. But yeah, big win for the Giants today, 9-3. Big win yesterday, 9-0. Now they fly home. Day off tomorrow. They welcome the Mets into town coming up on Friday night. So big day for the Giants today. Dibs, today also a big day for the 49ers. First training camp practice. And we had a number of questions answered. Dibs, if I were just to ask you quick, biggest things you wanted to learn or to know about the Niners today, what were some of the things on your mind?
Probably the health report, like who's out there, and not only the health, but is Juwan Jennings actually going to show up? Is he going to show up and actually play? Is he going to hold in? Is he going to play? What's going on with Juwan?
So Juwan, that's a big one. You mentioned the health report. Top of mind there is Ricky Pearsall, right? What's going on with Ricky? We had answers to both of those. You mentioned the health report as well. There was a different wide receiver that came up lame today as well. We'll tell you about that as well. First day of practice
is over.
As far as I know, there was only that one injury to a wide receiver. I don't think there's anything beyond that. The Niners have had worse training camp practices than that.
Yep.
Way worse. So we'll tell you everything you need to know about Niners training camp. Day number one, practice number one is in the books. We'll tell you about Juwan. We'll tell you about Ricky. Plus, a kicker competition, Dibs. We'll get into that when we come back as well. And you're not going to want to miss what Kyle Shanahan had to say to Tim Kawakami on the TK Show. If you haven't heard it yet, stay tuned. You can also find it, again, on the TK Show, a podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts, including right here on the free Odyssey app. We'll get to all that and a whole lot more. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7 The Game.